Next case is 04-1465, Cuyahoga County, or Cuyahoga Support Enforcement Agency versus Gregory Lovelady. Mr. Filiatro.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices. My name is Kevin Filiatro. I'm an Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Cuyahoga County, and I appear before you today on behalf of the Cuyahoga Support Enforcement Agency. This case is before the court on discretionary appeal from the 8th District Court of Appeals for the proposition of law that revised code 3119.96 et sec is an unconstitutional violation of this court's rulemaking authority granted to it by Article 4, Section 5B of the Ohio Constitution. CSEA's argument in this regard is fourfold, and I would begin by stating that in determining whether the statute violates the Constitution, we must look to its terms. Revised Code 3119.961, by its own terms, is a procedural rule, one that is meant to replace Civil Rule 60B in its application to protect judgments granted to it for paternity. This was the point made by the Van Dusen Court, the 10th District Court of Appeals, which was the first court to decide the issue. The rule in this case, in this regard, I would point the court to Rocky versus 84 Lumber Company, which states the civil rules of procedure, which were created by this court pursuant to this court's Article 4, Section 5B power, control over subsequently enacted inconsistent statutes purporting to govern procedural matters. So therefore, under Rocky, we must look to see what exactly 3119.961 does. I would submit to you that by its own terms, it is a procedural statute. Its first sentence states,
quote, the fact that the General Assembly said this is a substantive statute, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
What deference do we give to their temporary law in which the General Assembly says we're, despite one of the Supreme Court's rules, 60B, this is a substantive statute, and then on with it. Do we give that any deference, or do we look to the statute to determine whether it's procedural or substantive?
Well, Your Honor has hit upon the exact point that the 8th District Court of Appeals made. What Your Honor is referring to is legislative history. It is not codified in 3119.96 anywhere that it is a substantive statute. But even if it was, I would point this court to its decision in Trial Academy versus Sheward, in which, in that case, the statute said it was creating a substantive right, and the court looked to what it actually did, what the statute actually purported to do. And in this case, I would submit to the court that it be the same. 3119.961 is a procedural statute. We must look to its terms, what it actually does.
I would test you on that. The statute says, in effect, that a male who is challenging paternity may, I guess, at any time. Here it was 7 years, I think, before he filed a challenge to the paternity. May anytime say, I have DNA that shows I have zero chance of being the father of this child. Why is that not substantive? Seems procedural, but it also seems substantive.
Well, it is procedural because it regulates the time, place, and manner in which the motion may be made. Regardless of the merits of the motion, I would submit to you that it is akin to Civil Rule 60B, which it tells a litigant when it can file a 60B motion, but also for what reasons. In this case, the reason on 3119.961 would be because you've got a genetic test. But that runs afoul of the entire statutory procedure in 3111.01 through 1.8. 3119.961 says when you can file a motion and directs courts exactly how to rule on the motion.
But it also is very specific in what this motion is about, isn't it?
It is.
DNA tests that indicate zero chance that the person is the father. that substantive or is that procedural?
It's procedural, Your Honor, because Civil Rule 60B also contemplates what the motion is about. 60B 1, 2, and 3, motions made for fraud, mistake, motions made because the judgment is no longer applicable. For those reasons, 60B even gets into what the motion's about, what the litigant is trying to do with the motion, is relief from judgment. 3119961 goes further, though. It demands that courts grant the motion. It tells reviewing courts exactly how to proceed on the motion and says, as Your Honors pointed out, that if there is genetic testing proving that this male is not the father of the child, the father has neither adopted nor created the child through artificial insemination, the motion must be granted. And the statute goes further in suggesting that the motion may not be denied under certain circumstances. And those circumstances encompass every single way in which paternity is can be established through a court, administrative procedure, or acknowledgement under Chapter 3111. So 3119961, in effect, makes the entire chapter of 3111 moot. And I'll return to that point in a moment.
Is it your view that Mr. Lovelady, who, based on the genetic testing, is not the father, should pay the $46,000 judgment that you seek?
Your Honor, I would first like to point to the court that Mr. Lovelady did submit a purported test to the court. The veracity of that test was never determined. In general, when a litigant comes to court with a test saying that he is not the father of a child, it is standard procedure for CISA to look to the veracity of that test. Who was tested? Show us some proof of who exactly was tested, pictures and whatnot. But even assuming that this is a valid test and that Mr. Lovelady is excluded, it is CISA's opinion that yes, he should still be made to pay the judgment. Because, first of all, the statute under which he is asserting his claim is unconstitutional, and in its entirety, 3119.96 et sec. And that would include the provision under which he would be claiming relief, which would allow him to recover the funds and to nullify the judgment. Your Honor,
counsel, what was his connection over time with the child, personal connection?
The record is not does not give us evidence of that, Your Honor. There may have been a connection, there may not have been. And there was no testimony taken at any time during, as far as I could tell in the record, at any of the hearings on any of the motions in the case, as well as in the motion, the hearing on the motion to terminate.
Well, you're asking us to declare a statute unconstitutional. Part of your argument so far has been that one statute seems inconsistent or to knock out a whole other number of sections of statutes rather than our rules. Following up on Justice O'Donnell's question as to what your position is, it would seem if the does the statute make accommodation for or allowances for a situation in which the person who is later established not to be the father had a relationship with the child as a father over an extended period of time. That would seem to be wholly different than someone who is legally established to be the father, who has no connection.
I see Your Honor's point.
With the child, no relationship with the child, other than the courts established that they're supposed to send money. And then ultimately it turns out that that's based on a mistake.
Well, Your Honor,
it would seem there's a whole range of things in between.
That's precisely what the Van Dusen Court's problem with 3119961 was. It did not give reviewing courts the opportunity to look at the complexities of the father-child relationship.
So is that the infirmity with the statute? The statute is just, it allows no consideration of a situation. Let's say it's a husband and wife. And this little baby is born, and the husband thinks he's the father, but it turns out 15 years later he finds out he wasn't, but he treated the child as his own all of that time. And then there's a divorce, and he's gone, and now he wants out of a child support obligation.
If I may, that is precisely one of the problems with 3119961, is that it overrides Civil Rule 60B. What Your Honor is describing is exactly the type of analysis that would occur under Civil Rule 60B. And I would point to this Court's decisions as Drack versus.
But I think what I've described is really the merits of what courts would look at under a statutory framework, and that your real complaint is that the statute doesn't allow the leeway for that kind of consideration.
Exactly.
Rather than you don't like the statute, rather than that there's some big problem with the, whether it's process or procedure or substance.
Well, I would submit that the statute is unconstitutional because it overrides Civil Rule 60B, which is the procedural nature or the procedural mechanism through which a litigant should get relief from the judgment. In a reviewing court, using 60B, would look to the child's best interest. And that's exactly what Your Honor is talking about when you're looking at the complexities of the father-child relationship, one that may not be there, one that may be there.
Well, no, wait a minute. The child's best interest would always be to get the money, whether it's deserved or appropriate or not. And that seems to be what you're advocating. You can't even tell us whether this guy had any connection with this child at all.
To be honest, 3111 or 3119961 doesn't allow a court to look at whether Mr. Lovelady had a relationship with Dana Lloyd. It's irrelevant under the statute, whereas it is not irrelevant under Civil Rule 60B. And that's precisely one of the arguments that CESA makes to you, is that reviewing courts should be allowed to use the child's best interest.
Mr. Lovelady have, under the court order, a continuing obligation to support the child?
Your Honor, what the status of Mr. Lovelady's arrearages are now, they are current support arrearages. The child is now 20 years old.
Okay, let's take a hypothetical then. You have a 15-year-old, you have an arrearage order, you have a continuing obligation to still support. It was an order that was entered 5 years previously. Is there any provision for the father, the non-father now, to come in and say, at the very least, you need to relieve me of the obligation for future payments because I'm not the father? Or does the fact that the order was entered into 5 years ago under your scenario, a procedural order, trump that ability to come in and challenge it? Is he stuck then to pay child support until he's 18, despite the fact that he's now proven not to be the father?
Well, under 3119961, he is entitled or entitled to relief from the judgment of paternity, as well as all future payments, and can be relieved of all prior payments. So he's completely off the hook.
But if you want us to throw the entire statute out, what rights does he have then to come in and challenge an order that's 5 years old as to current payments?
His remedy would be under Civil Rule 60B, and I would submit that under 60B case law, that he could be relieved of future payments and be directed only to pay the arrearages.
How? The order is 5 years old. Your argument is that he can't come in anymore. A year is up. His year to challenge is up. What right does 60B give him to come in 5 years later and challenge it?
Civil Rule 60B allows for challenges to prior judgments beyond 1 year if it fits within subsection 4 or subsection 5.
Which are?
Well, subsection 4, I don't have.
One of those catch-alls, I think.
5 is the catch-all, yes.
So why can't this statute fit under the catch-all?
This statute specifically says, notwithstanding Civil Rule 60B to the contrary, it is meant to replace Civil Rule 60B, which I would submit is beyond the legislature's intent.
But if you harmonize the two and say this actually fits under the catch-all because it affects a substantive right to come in and correct a mistake under 5, we read them in harmony despite the statute language saying we overthrow 60B's right to control us, but we read them in harmony. We offer to try to save a statute from constitutional infirmity. Can we do that?
I submit to you that there is no way to read this statute reasonably in relation to Civil Rule 60B and 3111.01 through .18, specifically 3111.08, which states the legislature wanted the civil rules to apply to paternity actions.
We could save the statute, at least in this case, could we not, by simply applying Pelton and saying that, even assuming the statute's constitutional, that there's waiver here. Judge Cooney, that's what she did. She also believed it's constitutional, but we don't even have to get there, do we? We just have to say even assuming that 3119.96.2 is good law for the purposes. We have no briefing on the other side. We have no amicus briefs. This is a pretty important question, I guess. But here, he waited 7 years. I think that's correct, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Before filing, he had notice. Apparently, had notice, and you know, he never filed anything. Never appeared any time when he was given notice. Why don't we just apply Pelton and say, even assuming we're not going to even decide whether it's constitutional or not, let's assume it's constitutional. He waived his right to raise that issue because of his dilatory tactics or conduct.
I would submit to the court that you could not apply Pelton in this case because, first of all, Mr. Lovelady did not apply for 60B relief. The motion that we're talking about is a motion to terminate, which the court viewed under 3119.96. And that statute does not require any time frame. That statute specifically allows for, at any time, a litigant, a male, specifically.
But the concept of waiver in the law is a pretty firm concept, is it not?
Your Honor.
He waited 7 years before he did anything.
3119.961 respectfully does not allow for a waiver. Does not allow for.
Well, the statute doesn't provide for a waiver, but courts have declared waivers. We've done it. We do it all the time.
Yes, and if this was
individual cases.
If this was a 60B case, that would probably be one of CESA's arguments.
We cannot find a waiver. We cannot find that a party has waived his or her even a substantive right. Is that right? If it's statutory.
This statute does not allow for the right to be waived.
I know the words of the statute do not allow for it. My question, counsel, is courts, though, provide a law of waiver.
Yes.
We find waiver by the conduct of individual parties, even though a statute doesn't expressly say there may be waiver in this case, or you have to do something by a certain time. Is that am I off base on that?
Respectfully, I would submit that if the court is looking at this case under the words of 3119.961, because it allows for a litigant to come in, a male, to come in at any time, waiver wouldn't apply. The court could not apply a court rule of waiver to a claim made under the statute. And I would submit to the court, and I see that my time is up, that even if this court finds that the right to relief from judgment itself is substantive, I would request the court to look at the case under State versus Greer, in which procedural rules provided by the court were allowed to govern over substantive rights.
Counsel, I'm still tangled up in that. His obligation is statutory.
Yes.
And what the legislature has said is, if you can at any time prove that you have no statutory obligation, you don't have it.
Correct. The legislature has said that. And I would argue that.
Isn't that all substantive? I mean, it's substantive, clearly, the obligation to support is a substantive statute.
It is, Your Honor. I would. Okay. It is.
And hasn't that substantive statute now been amended to say, if at any time you show that you don't fit within the grasp of this statute, you're free from it. And any bookkeeping that's been done down at the courthouse pursuant to your obligations under this statute are wiped out. Slate's clean.
That would be the case, Your Honor, if the statutory provision at issue, 3119.96, was codified within 3111.01 through .18. And the reason I say that is because 3111.08 states that the civil rules of procedure shall govern actions brought under this statute, 3111.01, unless a specific statutory provision is created within those statutes. So the legislature has said, we want the civil rules to apply. We want them to apply unless we say something within these statutes says otherwise. This is not a statute within 3111.01 through .18. This is an entirely different chapter. The legislature has contradicted itself to the detriment of Civil Rule 60B, as well as mothers, children, and the state.
So if they had put this statute in the same chapter as the chapter on child support, they'd be fine.
This would be an entirely different case if they did, Your Honor. It would.
I just want to clarify. You're talking in your brief, you're saying you're arguing that 3119.961 et sequitur is unconstitutional.
Yes.
You've always been talking about points 961, which is the procedural segment, but there are seven other subsections.
Yes.
You are challenging all eight of them, is that correct?
All eight of them, yes, Your Honor. All eight of them are procedural, all eight of them are unconstitutional.
I just wanted to clarify your position.
Yes, Your Honor.
You've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The appellee has not filed a brief. The waiver argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.